Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Alex Kotlowitz, who is the award-winning author of the national bestsellers There Are No Children Here, The Other Side of the River, and Never a City So Real. His award-winning documentary, The Interrupters, a collaboration with Steve James, aired as a two-part special on PBS's Frontline. He's a former staff writer at the Wall Street Journal, and he's won the George Foster Peabody Award, the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award, and the George Polk Award, and is a regular contributor to the New York Times Magazine. He is completing a two-part series for public radio's This American Life about gun violence, scheduled to be aired in a couple of weeks. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alex Kotlowitz.
Well, thanks for having me, Ian.
And there was, of course, in the testimony today before the U.S. Congress, Senator... Your senator, in fact, brought up the death of Hadiya Pendleton, and of course he got into a testy exchange with the head of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre, about Pierre's contention that background checks don't work, prompting Senator Durbin to say, you missed the whole point. The reason that you have background checks is that criminals can't buy guns that way. That prevents them from buying guns. But this was a very, I must say, a rather embarrassing set of hearings with senators complaining that they couldn't bring guns into the hearing and talking about how video games are responsible for violence in this country. You've been really at the forefront of this for so long, Alex. Give us your sense of what it's like trying to do what you do and yet have our leaders engaged in this fatuous debate.
Right. Well, I think the hard thing, you know, is that the killings that we see in places like the South Side of Chicago, like we saw yesterday, have been going on for so long now. I did some recent calculations. You look at the last 10 years in this city, we've lost over 5,200 people, another 24,000 people shot. I mean, the numbers are just staggering. And yet there's no public conversation about what's at work here. And what for me is so encouraging in the wake of a Columbine or Newtown is the kind of conversation that takes place where we begin asking all the right questions, which is why did it happen? What brought this individual to this place to cause such horrific scene, and what do we do about it? And we don't ask that question when Hadiya Pendleton is killed. Look, guns are very much a part of it. You know, in the city of Chicago, the police department every year, virtually every year, takes off 7,000 to 8,000 guns off the street. I mean, it's again a staggering number of weapons, and it's just this constant river of weapons. But guns alone are not the problem. I mean, you look at the violence that takes place in the south and west sides of the city, and these are communities that are desperately poor, communities in which the sort of window of opportunity is not only widened but in many ways closed. And so I think there's so many factors at work here.
Well, Alex Kotlowitz, tell us about your documentary, and for those who did not see the two-part PBS Frontline special, The Interrupters, based upon the idea that there are these very, very courageous people that are often former gang members working in this community that's ravaged by gun violence, where they call themselves violence interrupters. And the documentary itself sprung from a New York Times article that you wrote about Ceasefire, Illinois. So just give us that context, if you will.
Please. So, you know, Steve James and myself were longtime friends. We, you know, we really in this film set out to sort of try to understand as best we could sort of the reasons for the violence and sort of whether there was any sense of promise or hope. And so we spent a year following these three individuals, as you say, these three violence interrupters who worked for this organization, public health organization called Ceasefire. And the notion behind Ceasefire is just in some ways a kind of simple one, which is the idea that if you can go out and interrupt disputes and keep people from picking up a gun, that you can begin to change the behavior not only of individuals but of groups of individuals. And what the violence interrupters are individuals who are people who are of the street. They out there were once wreaking havoc in their communities. So we followed three of them, Amina Matthews, Kobe Williams, and Eddie Bocanegra, really amazing individuals. And these are people who I think if I'd ran into, if I had met 15, 20 years ago, I probably would have thrown my hands up and said, you know, I know the shape of their story, and it's not going to be good. And yet here they are. I mean, really performing heroically. They're out in their communities. We followed them as they went out and not only interrupted and mediated disputes in the streets, but also became mentors to many of the kids that they encountered. And they know firsthand as well that if they were going to make a difference in the lives of these individuals, that they needed to offer them something, that there needed to be jobs or good schools there for them, something that gave them a sense of future. And they, for me, I mean, I think Steve and I were kind of braced for what we thought was going to be a grim year of filming. And we came away utterly inspired by our time with these three individuals.
And again, I'm speaking with Alex Kotlowitz, the award-winning author of national bestsellers, There Are No Children Here, The Other Side of the River, and Never a City So Real. And he, along with, in collaboration with Steve James, made the PBS Frontline two-part documentary series, The Interrupters. Now, clearly, though, things have, I don't know whether they're better off or worse off than when you were making your film, but the idea that just in this month alone, 42 people have been killed by guns violence on the South Side alone, isn't it?
Right. No, we've had a terrible month here. We had a terrible year last year. You know, and a couple of weeks ago, it was looking reasonably good that we were starting off the year on a good foot. In fact, the police talked about how it looked like the number of homicides were going to be less than last year. We had 506 last year, as the highest in quite a while, but we've just had a horrible, horrible month, especially the last 10 days. And, you know, these are the highest numbers since 2002.
But the idea is so tragic, and it just gets you in the heart, that this young 15-year-old girl that had just been a drum majorette at the inauguration was the biggest moment in her life. That's what Senator Durbin pointed out today in the Senate hearing on gun control, that she had so much promise ahead. She wanted to be a journalist and go to Northwestern, and she's coming home from school after finishing her exams and seeks shelter under a little sort of awning because of a sudden downpour of rain, and some guy comes out of nowhere and blasts away. Right. She gets shot in the back. And then those around her who were obviously the targets of the shooting just leave her to die. I mean, the whole thing is so heartbreaking.
Right. Though, to be fair to them, and I don't know the situation, I imagine they were running for their lives. I mean, I've heard of that before. And I think one of the things that we do is we completely underestimate the effect of a moment like this on the lives of her family, of all those kids that were there with her, of all the people, kids at her school. And, you know, these are individuals and communities that are completely traumatized by the violence. But it sounds glib, but it's just completely senseless. I mean, completely senseless tragedy. But we, you know, we had 42 of them this past month, each of them equally senseless.
But to some extent, all of this is an ongoing, these statistics are mind-numbing, that this goes on all the time. And at the time of Newtown, so many pundits in the press were saying, because it was an affluent white suburb in Connecticut, they were saying, well, this is just wasn't meant to happen here, as though somehow it's meant to happen elsewhere. And I'm wondering whether, you know, there is a bias in our coverage and focus on the amount of gun violence that goes on a constant basis in minority communities.
Right. Well, I think absolutely. I mean, I think there's a kind of resignation that's set in. I mean, I always remember here in Chicago, a few years back, the Chicago Sun-Times ran a banner headline that read "Murder at a Good Address," and it was about a dermatologist who was murdered in his office on the very wealthy and ritzy Michigan Avenue. And I couldn't help but laugh at the brazenness of it, because I couldn't imagine them running a headline that read "Murder at a Bad Address." I think you're right. I think there's a kind of acceptance that, you know, and I hear people kind of somewhat facilely referring to people being numb to the violence. I don't think people ever get numb to that violence. I don't think people ever get hardened by it. I don't think they get accustomed to it. I think it has a devastating effect on these communities, and has begun in some cases to really begun to shape the very character of those communities.
But many of the violence interrupters in your film were, and some of them subsequently in interviews have been wrestling with them, why it is these teenage boys feel so slighted by what somebody says on Facebook, or what, you know, somebody disses them in either a real or imaginative way, and they have this reflex, and they don't. Then they don't seem to be afraid of death in a way. They don't expect long lives, many of these kids, which is...
Right. I mean, I do think you're right that there's a sense that there's not much future, and you'll often hear people say, you know, if I make it to 18. But there's a moment in The Interrupters, which for me it kind of just became so crystal clear what was going on, when Amina, one of the interrupters, she talks about how, you know, you can, you know, you're a girl going to a high school, and you wake up in the morning, and you know, you're wearing your cousin's sweater, you've been molested by your stepdad, you've lost a friend in a shooting a few weeks ago, and you go to school and somebody just mistakenly bumps into you, and you just go into what she calls this 30 seconds of rage. And I do think there's an incredible amount of anger out there, incredible amount of hostility. I mean, I spent the last 4 months at Harper High School for this upcoming series we're doing for This American Life, and I hung out with two social workers there, two amazing women. And one of the kids that they are dealing with is a young man who's just this past summer was with a young girl as she was shot and killed on her porch. It was the second time he's been with somebody when they've been murdered. Completely traumatized, all the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. And what he talks to me about is wanting to hurt someone. And it's because it's the only way he can conceive of any sense of relief. He's not a bad kid. And so I do think that one of the things that we've really neglected in these communities is the impact and effects of experiencing the trauma of being privy to all this violence.
Well, I can't imagine there's any degrees accepting, you know, or being able to deal with the tragedy. But one of the most bitter ironies about this, and particularly in the case of Hadiya Pendleton, is that she was collateral damage. And so often, you know, and she is a high school honor student, you keep hearing about these kids that are trying to make it out of these neighborhoods, and she wanted to go to Northwestern. And they're the ones who get shot in the crossfire. It's not, you know, it's not just that kids get targeted because they're gangbangers and get killed, but that's the part of it that's so heartbreaking. You're just as likely to be killed if you're, you know, collateral damage.
Right. No. I mean, look, they're very dangerous neighborhoods, and they're, you know, you hear stories of parents that simply won't allow their kids to leave the house. You know, again, at Harper, one of the things the good kids in the school talk about, about having to navigate their way to and from school so that they can avoid the blocks where they think there might be some trouble brewing.
And if the, you know, if they accidentally wear the wrong colors or bump into somebody accidentally, that could be a death sentence.
Right, right. And I will say there's I do think there's a little bit of a mistaken notion about this kind of gang warfare that exists.
Mm-hmm.
The kids now, I mean, the gangs are completely fractured. It's really kind of, they refer to them as cliques and crews. It's a group of kids from one block to the next, and there's a lot of battling going on. But in the end, it's really over nothing. And as you suggest, so much of the violence is over what seems to be such petty, petty matters, such petty incidents.
So it's not like it is here in Los Angeles, where so many of the big gangs are essentially drug dealing operations.
Right. No, it used to be in the city, but so many of the leaders have been put away, and it's not that way at all anymore.
Mm-hmm. It truly is mindless. Then it's all like autopilot violence.
It feels so random, I guess. Mm-hmm. You certainly see that in the shooting yesterday.
Well, one of the things that just apropos, and we're going to wrap it up in a minute here, apropos the hearings in the Senate today, one of the spokespeople for the Chicago police pointed out that up to 50% of crime guns that they find in these neighborhoods are sold, in the rural areas outside of Chicago. So there you have it. The gun dealers out there seem to, and it's only a few gun shops apparently, that you'd think to be able to stop that.
Right. Well, I mean, the irony is that Chicago's got reasonably strict gun laws. You can't purchase a gun within the boundaries of the city. And so you're right. So many of the guns are purchased from these suburban gun dealerships. And one in particular, Chuck's Gun Dealership, where a lot of straw purchasers go. And the straw purchasers are people who don't have a felony conviction. They can go and legally purchase guns, and they do, and they come back to South or West Side of Chicago and sell those guns at a small markup.
And Chuck's the kind of guy that Wayne LaPierre of the NPR of the NRA is protecting. So
right,
go
right.
Figure.
They can buy multiple guns without anybody reporting them.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Alex Kotlowitz.
Well, thanks for having me, Ian. I appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Alex Kotlowitz, who's an award-winning author of the national bestsellers There Are No Children Here, The Other Side of the River, and Never a City So Real. His award-winning documentary, The Interrupters, in collaboration with Steve James, aired as a two-part special on PBS's Frontline. He's a former staff writer for The Wall Street Journal, and he's won the George Foster Peabody Award, the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award, and the George Polk Award, and is a regular contributor to the New York Times Magazine. And he's completing a two-part series for Public Radio's This American Life about gun violence, scheduled to air in a couple of weeks. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. One more life.